You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, the official podcast of RedLegNation.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another edition of Red Leg Nation Radio. I'm your host, Chad Dotson, flying solo here for just a moment. I was joined by our good friend Mark Sheldon, one of the Reds beat writers for the beat writer for MLB.com. He took a little time out to speak with us. Let's go ahead and jump right into that. Joined here today with our good friend Mark Sheldon, the beat writer for the Cincinnati Reds for MLB.com. How are you doing today, Mark?
Chad, I am fantastic, but I am ready to come home.
I bet. And I really do appreciate you taking a few minutes of your time for us. When are you coming back home?
I'll be home. I'm skipping Saturday's games. There's a split squad game on Saturday, but I'll be leaving first thing in the morning, and I'll be home Saturday afternoon, which I'll be very happy about. I love Arizona. I love the weather, but it's time to go home. 7 weeks anywhere but home is always a long time.
That is a long time when you leave a family back home and out there working. We'll talk a little bit more about your work in a moment, but I've not been to Arizona. I keep saying I'm going to get out to Goodyear. Haven't done it yet. Now, I know you've been slaving away at your day job out there, and I don't mean that sarcastically. I know that you guys are working really hard out there. But can you give us regular Joes some idea of what it's like, what's it like spring training in Arizona?
Well, it's different in Florida in the sense that everything is closer together. There's 15 teams out here. There's no road trip that's longer than 45 minutes. So if the Reds, like last night, the Reds played the Cubs in Mesa. That was a 45-minute drive. That's the worst trip I'm ever going to take all spring. In Florida, you could be in the car for 6 hours in one day. If you have a game at Kissimmee or in Lakeland or Dunedin, you're in the car a lot. So that's a big difference. But the days out here, as much as you work, it's not as bad as Florida because you get there early in the morning, and sometimes, especially earlier in camp, you get in around 7:30, and you go to talk to Dusty Baker in the morning, and you get the workouts, and you talk to the players, and you could be done by 3 or 4. Once the game starts, it's a little bit later, but not too bad, but it's manageable, but it's funny how you get on a big pace for a while. You come in, and you do your morning acting, you know, clubhouse access, you watch batting practice, you have a little bit more clubhouse access, and you watch a game. But when the game's over, you can go home, and you're home within 15 minutes, as opposed to Florida, where you may have to drive back from Tampa for an hour or 2 hours, depending on traffic. So it's much better out here than in Florida.
Well, I think every Reds fan needs to try to make that trip at least once. And everyone that goes there tells me it's a great time. It's a good setup for the fans that want to go out there and see everyone a little more laid back in some ways. So, but I know you're ready to get back home and it's new season getting ready to start. Do you, I guess the question, everybody's optimistic about this year's team. Do you sense sort of a feeling of unfinished business around the Reds, or do you expect to see that if you're not been able to see it yet?
No, I've seen that, and I felt it. I think no one liked what happened last year, getting knocked out by the Giants the way they did after winning, going up 2-0 in San Francisco was terrible for the team. They did not like that. They really felt disappointed. And then going into this year, I think Jay Bruce put it best, is they have higher expectations on themselves than anyone outside the club could have on them. And they really do feel like they need to take it further, farther, and better. If they don't get past the first round of the playoffs this year, it's a huge disappointment. It's a failure. And they know that. And this team has a lot of heat up on it. The acquisition that's two has made it turned up a notch even, just because they were missing a leadoff hitter last year. Well, now they have a leadoff hitter. So, you know, they have a really good rotation. They have a very strong bullpen. They have an otherwise good lineup. And I think those are the things that make people feel confident about the team this year, that they can go not just win the division, but go further. And they're not just thinking about winning the division. They're thinking bigger picture than that, which is a different vibe than I've seen in this clubhouse in the past.
I know you guys, when you're following the team, you're on the beat, you're not fans of the team, but it's got to be a lot more interesting to cover a team that's doing well, expected to do well, in which there's sort of some positive vibes around the club. Seems to me anyway, it'd be a lot more interesting to cover a team like that. Is that true?
You're actually right about the part that we're not fans of the team. I'm not a fan of the team. I'm a huge baseball fan, of course. But what I would say this camp, though, other than the Aroldis Chapman question, has been one of the least interesting camps. There really hasn't been a whole lot of action as far as news stories and things that go on. When teams aren't very good or when teams are kind of on the cusp but they're not quite there yet, there's a lot more questions. But when you came into this camp, most of the roster questions were pretty well figured out before we even got here. I mean, the only question was whether Chu could play center field or not. He's proven he could. Joey Votto's knee, was it okay? He proved pretty quickly it was okay. And then, of course, in the roster decision, is it Mike Leake or Aroldis Chapman for the fifth spot? And will Chapman close? And really, there hasn't been a whole lot of crazy roster battles. There's only been the battle for the backup infielder spot, maybe a bullpen battle. You know, right now they're deciding towards who's going to be like the last bullpen guy. But it hasn't been as much. When you have a winning team, things are pretty quiet. And when you have a losing team and some of the teams I covered when I first got to Cincinnati, you have a lot more people and a lot more questions and a lot more stories.
Well, no question about that. And obviously the one big story was the Aroldis Chapman scenario, as you mentioned a moment ago. And I don't have any interest in getting into the merits of that decision. I've said my piece. I probably need to just let that one die. But is there any sense around the club that everyone's just glad to have the decision made so they can move on and really prepare for this season, or is that just not even? I know these guys are professionals, but is there any sense like that?
No, I never noticed anything different in the clubhouse. I think you had a lot of players, and a couple of them on the record, like Bronson Arroyo, did not think that Chapman could be a starter, and I think just having him be the closer, everyone kind of is comfortable with that. If it's the tried and the true, and a lot of baseball players, and I think people in general, baseball guys, I guess. It's like going with the known entities, and that's a known entity that he can close and he could be an all-star and be the shutdown guy in the ninth. It would have been more daring to have him start. In my preference, if I was making this team up, I would have had him as the starter, but that's done. It's not happening. But I didn't get any sense of any change in the clubhouse, the dynamic. I mean, Mike Leake, it was never that Aroldis Chapman was great to be a starter. Mike Leake was lousy. It was never like that. I think a lot of people try to make it like that. That somehow, if it was Chapman versus Leake, and Leake was awful, and he's not chopped liver. He's actually an above average fifth starter. He's good for that role. So they're very confident with Mike Leake in this spot. This is the rotation that started 161 of 162 games last year. Four guys pitched 200 innings. Five guys made 30 starts at least. So they're good with this, and they know that this is a rotation, if it stays healthy, and is capable of doing good things.
Well, my opinion obviously was that I wanted him to try Chapman as a starter too, but what's done is done, as you said. Speaking of Mike Leake, I'm glad you mentioned that because it's absolutely true. It shouldn't have been a Leake versus Chapman situation, and because a lot of times what happens is the feeling around the Reds, I guess, fan world is that, well, Leake's awful is what comes across. And he's not. And matter of fact, there have been good reports about how his numbers haven't been great, but there have been good reports about how he's looked this spring. Is he ready to take even the next step? He's getting to his prime years when we should expect possibly him to take maybe the step that Homer Bailey took last year.
Well, two seasons ago, he was very, very good. He led the team in wins, actually. Last season, he was lousy. For about the first six or seven starts, I think he had 0-5, 7-plus ERA. So, and then he kind of straightened it out, and he was pretty good. And but he was inconsistent overall. I think this spring he's been pretty good. He had one start where he got absolutely lit up like a Christmas tree. I was not at that start, but I heard he was not very good. Today he pitched, and he looked really good. He was doing very well. Him and Mesoraco had a good group going. They were working together very well. It looked good. What makes Leake different than Chapman in this sense is that Aroldis Chapman can cover up a lot of mistakes just with his power, with his velocity. He can be wild and throwing 100 miles an hour and they won't hit him. If Mike Leake doesn't have pinpoint control that day, he can get hit hard. And that's the thing. He needs to be right on, spot on every time out. If he's not locating well, it could be a long day for him. But I think as long as he's working well, he can be a very good pitcher. And, yes, he can take the next step. And very importantly, he wants to take the next step. He wants to be the fifth 200-inning pitcher on that staff. He doesn't want to be the guy that's not throwing 200 innings. So it's whether it's possible or not, we'll see. But I think what I've seen in camp so far and the times I've seen him, I've missed a couple of his starts. I think he's looked pretty good.
That's good to hear. Now, you mentioned last year how lucky the Reds really were with respect to how injury-free the rotation was until the postseason, of course, when Cueto got injured. But what do you sense? The Reds certainly have to have a plan. If a starter were to get hurt early in the season, what do the Reds do? You know, the day after they made the – or the couple days after they made the decision on Chapman, had a couple of pitchers take line drives off
right.
their body. What happens, and you may not even be able to speculate about this, but do you have any opinion about what might happen if a starter gets hurt early in the season, which way the Reds will go?
Yeah, they have a few options, actually. They actually have more options this year than they would have had last year, because last year they really didn't have a whole lot of depth at Triple-A. They had Brett Tomko, if you may remember, and the one time they needed a starter, they called a Todd Redmond, who was not a world beater in terms of starting. He was not a prospect. He was just a veteran guy that happened to be in Triple-A. Well, this year, Tony Cingrani, my expectation would be the first guy in line to be called up if anything happened to the rotation. You have Daniel Corsino, who had a very good year at Double-A last year, who has a lot of comparisons to Johnny Cueto, maybe to be a guy called up. And then you look at somebody, if they need a veteran, Armando Galarraga did not have a bad spring. And he's obviously got starting experience, and he's a guy that if they needed a starter on short notice or just like a spot start type of guy, they could call him in. Or if it was literally a spot start for whatever reason, Sam LaCure could probably do it if they had to. So I think they have some more options this year than they did last year.
Speaking of options and options that Dusty Baker has at the top of the lineup, you mentioned Shin-Soo Choo a moment ago, but you know, most Reds fans really probably haven't paid a whole lot of attention to that guy before this year. I've been in love with him as a player for a while, and I'm really excited to have him at the top of the lineup. Everyone says, everything I read about him, that he's a great guy. I like him for his on-base percentage, but what can you tell us, what can you tell Reds fans about Shin-Soo Choo? What are we going to see out of this guy?
Well, on the offensive side, he's a very smart hitter. He is got a really smooth, very – what Todd Frazier told me for a story I worked on the other day was his swing is kind of la-di-da. It's a very smooth, easy, rhythmic swing until he hits the ball. And then the ball just comes off his bat really well because he always gets the barrel of the bat squared up on the ball, and he drives it, and he hits line drives. And he's very methodical with his swing, and he can do that no matter where the ball is located. Defensively, I think he's been very impressive at center field. For all the hemming and hawing from a lot of fans and the media was whether, you know, he couldn't play center field because he hasn't played it since 2009. He's actually played it pretty well out here. He's made some good plays from the get-go. Even when he missed some time with the back injury, he came back and he never looked like a liability in center field. So if he can play center field out here where the outfields are a lot bigger and longer and the ball flies out pretty hard and it's harder to see in the sun, he should be able to play center field at Great American Ballpark. So I think fans should feel optimistic about him and defensively. Will he be as good as a center fielder as this does? No. No, he won't. But I think he'll be fine for what they need. I think the trade-off is they're going to give up some defense in order to get what they can get from offense, because that's going to create a lot more run-producing opportunities when he gets on base.
Well, I hope no one's expecting him to be Drew Stubbs in center field, because very few players are as good defensively as Drew Stubbs. But I think you're right. If he can be adequate at the top of the order, then I think that his bat makes up for it. And having him at the top of the order really does sort of fundamentally change his lineup, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, last year they were not creating situations for Joey Votto or whoever was going in for Joey Votto, whether it was the third spot. There was no one getting cut bait at the top. And you saw that when they finished the second run this year, and it just wasn't happening. And then when you roll the lineup around, you know, right hitting, and
on base, comes around, he's capable of driving in a run as he is getting on base. So it's
it's going to be different if he does what he's supposed to do. And, you know, he'll strike out a bunch still. He struck out 150 times last year. He's not perfect, but, and he's not the prototypical leadoff hitter, but he can definitely get on base and work counts and do what he has to do.
Well, he does have a little more power than a lot of leadoff hitters, and you're right, he's not prototypical, but I just love the fact that having him in front of Joey Votto and Jay Bruce and whoever else might be up there, it should give the Reds a lot more scoring opportunities. So the offense, obviously the pitching carried him last year, probably the number two rotation in the National League. But if that offense improves any, this team, well, sky's the limit, I guess.
Well, it's what makes them really a lot of people's favorite to win the division. I think they're going to win the division. It won't be like the Cardinals. You know, the Cardinals are going to be a good team, and the Reds aren't going to run away with it. But right now, the Reds have almost as good as a lineup as the Cardinals have. I would say the Cardinals have a slightly better offense. The Reds have the better rotation. They definitely have the best bullpen. They play the best defense. I think got to get the Reds right now in the division over St. Louis or anyone else.
That's what I like to hear. You mentioned Joey Votto a moment ago. He's healthy, and no reason not to expect another Joey Votto-type season, I guess. And that's important for the Reds.
It is, and he's very driven. He's been – it's funny. I talked to him today, and he's had a very good spring all throughout. Usually he has a slow start and kind of comes on the last – but he's been really numbers-wise good. But he says he doesn't feel like he's having a good spring. He feels like he's – yeah, his numbers are there, but he's not doing what he wants to do. But at the same time, I think he also expects a lot more from himself than other people do. And he's doing well. And the most important thing is that his knee isn't bothering him. He doesn't wear a brace on his knee. He's not limping. He's not showing any signs that he's favoring anything. And he's been doing okay. He's still working on the sliding. I saw him the other day. He's out in the backfield. They water the grass, make it nice and wet and slippery. He's in his socks practicing sliding on his other leg with one of the coaches, and it's kind of a new thing. But he really wants to be able to contribute all the way around and make that part of his game too. And he's not going to, like he did at the end of last year, not slide, which is what he had to do. But I think he feels like he's healthy. I think it's going to take some time to fully mentally believe that he's okay and that he won't get hurt again sliding. That always comes with your first major injury, but I think overall he's going to be okay, and you got to look at him immediately as a preseason MVP candidate. And before he got injured last year, he was definitely in the Triple Crown running, so we'll see what happens.
You mentioned the word driven with respect to Votto, and that's really the best word it seems like to describe him. You've been around a lot of good players over the years. Have you ever covered anyone even remotely like Joey Votto?
I mean, a lot of players that covered are very driven. I covered players in Cincinnati and Minnesota that you're not in the major leagues unless you're driven. You're ambitious. You want to play and be better. But what makes Jim stand out maybe is that he's probably the smartest player I've ever been around. He can do things at the plate and make adjustments that I just haven't seen other people do, whether it's changing his footwork in the batter's box, choking up in a certain count, especially with two strikes. He'll be willing to go from looking for a big hit earlier in a count to just trying to get on base later in the count. He can draw walks. He can do a lot of things. And he's also a hard worker because if you remember when he first came in the league, he was not known for his defense. He was actually considered below average defensively, and he won a Gold Glove a couple of years ago. So he's not only is he driven, he's very intelligent, and he's just very talented naturally, and that he's able to do this. But he also is willing to work and do all the things he has to do. He's not a superstar that has got the huge contract and now is just going to phone it in for the next 10 years. He's going to be very productive for a long time as long as he's healthy.
How's his cohort out there, Jay Bruce, looking this spring?
Jay's looked pretty good, too. He started off slow like a lot of guys did, but Jay Bruce came on, too. He's had a couple of home runs that have been absolutely sensational, even for Arizona standards, where he's hit him a mile. But he's been fine. Jay's, as has been written about ad nauseum, it's all about consistency for him. And, yeah, he's got to avoid those gigantic peaks and valleys where he hits 400 one month and 100 the next month. And it's just one of those things. He's going to have to shorten those skids. But I think every year, though, he keeps trending upward with his production. He had 34 homers last year and 99 RBIs, and there's no reason to think that he can't hit 40 homers and get 100 RBIs. So we'll see. But right now he's been fine this spring. There hasn't been any trouble, and I defensively he's always going to be sound. He's got a great arm, so we'll see what happens.
Let's just quickly, if we could, talk about a couple of the, I guess, position battles. And you mentioned earlier, and you're correct, there weren't very many position battles with the Reds this year. And the ones that they did have, other than Chapman, obviously, which is maybe not technically a position battle, were for backups and into the bullpen type situations. So the one interesting one to a lot of Reds fans, though, was the backup catcher battle between Devin Mesoraco and Miguel Olivo. Mesoraco evidently has looked pretty good this spring. That's what we hear anyway. Is that true?
No, that's what I've seen. He's been, if not the best, one of the best as far as offensively this whole spring. The ball isn't just, he's not just getting hits. He's hitting the ball very soundly and very hard and getting the barrel on it, and he's looked good. And I think he can't put too much into it because of his spring training and people are doing different things, not throwing the pitches they would normally throw in certain counts and whatnot. But for what spring training is, he's looked very good, and he knew that he couldn't just use this camp just to get ready for the season. He had to come in and earn a spot. That was different than last year. Last year, he knew he was on a team. This year, he didn't know, and he had to go out and get it, and he did. He earned the spot. It wasn't like by default. It wasn't because Miguel Oliva didn't play well. He played, Doug Mesoraco played very well, and he earned it. And now the question is whether he can handle playing part-time and not getting in every day and having 2 days on and 3 days off and being a good defensive catcher. He had some work to do defensively too, but he seems like he's better in that area as well. So we'll see. He thinks that because he has a better, understanding of the job and how to prepare that he didn't have last year, just because he's a rookie, now he kind of gets it and he thinks he'll be better.
How much help does he get from Ryan Hannigan, who's really sort of the consummate professional guy that has just surprised everyone with his ability to not only stick in the major leagues but be a very, very effective catcher, both behind the plate and hitting?
He does get help, yeah.
Yeah.
Hannigan, again, another – you talk about smart players. He's right up there too with Votto. He's a very, very intelligent guy, and he has a firm grasp of the game and of people and of pitchers and what needs to be done. He's an incredibly intelligent guy. I don't think that a lot of the problems that Mesoraco had was so much in preparation for catching. A lot of that comes with experience and understanding pitchers and hitters and things like that. One of the people that Mesoraco actually kind of leaned on was Miguel Cairo, because Miguel Cairo was always prepared as a pinch hitter and a come off the bench guy, and that was one area where Mesoraco really had a shortcoming, was that he wasn't ready for whatever reason to be cold and come off the bench and be productive. And he said that was somebody that helped him to get ready, to understand that even when you're not playing, you have to do certain things behind the scenes to keep yourself ready to go, that if they do call on you, that you can produce.
Do you see there being a situation where he's got to come in and produce pretty quickly? Because if Olivo accepts that, the AAA assignment and sticks around with the Reds, they'll have this veteran guy in AAA ready to really have sort of a classic backup catcher. You think there's pressure on Mesoraco to produce early?
Well, I think there will be, but I don't think it's because of Olivo. I have a feeling Olivo will not be with the Reds come April 1st or even in the organization. It sounds like just hearing some things that he may have a major league offer somewhere else. So I don't think he's going to be with the Reds.
Well, then it's Corky Miller, but we don't mind seeing him in Cincinnati. That guy's a character, I guess, isn't he?
Well, I'll tell you what, Corky Miller, he's not known for hitting at all, and I'm not going to say that he, no matter what, he's told me that he's working on some things that he's going to be a great hitter, but what he is a very good catcher. And if you notice, if you look back at 2010 when he did have to come up, the pitching staff didn't miss the beat. He's very good working with pitchers, and he has a clue. And he's, Dusty Baker said he'll be a future pitching coach with the organization at some point, because he really does understand that part of the game very well. And I think if they had to call on Corky Miller would, at least behind the plate, the pitching staff would not suffer.
I think that's absolutely true from what I've seen. And I can't imagine that I would be in favor of a guy that can't hit. I mean, he can't hit at the major league level anymore if he ever could, but he still could be, he could help this team if they needed him. And let's hope it doesn't come to that, but if, it's good to have him. Now, what about the back of the bullpen? I'm personally hoping J.J. Hoover sneaks in there, but I'm not sure I see how he's going to, since he has certainly options, and they just gave Andrusek this two-year deal in the offseason. Any chance Hoover makes it? How do you see all that playing out? Or do you have any idea at this point?
I think Hoover is going to make it. I can't see if they want to win now, like they say they do, you have to take Hoover north.
That's what I've been saying.
If they want to win. And Andrusek has options. He did sign a two-year deal, but he's not. He has options left, and that means he can go down. And he didn't fare his better today, but he still gave up a two-run home run. But right now, it's really going to be tough. It's about, you got Hoover, you got Manny Parra, who they can't send down, from what I understand, because he's a five-year major league veteran. He has to approve being optioned, so you gotta wonder what he's going to do. And then you have Alfredo Simon, who's the long guy, but didn't really pitch much this spring because of the World Baseball Classic. He got used once in for the Dominican, so they have to really figure some of this stuff out, and he's out of options. Jose Arredondo's out of options. So they have some business side issues as well as performance things they have to figure out, but I think my gut tells me that when they leave here, Hoover's going to be with the team.
Well, that'll definitely be a sign that they're serious when they say that they're all in for this year. But you're right, there's a lot of arms out there, and they may end up having to lose someone. Of course, that's a lot better situation than some years when they barely had enough arms to fill out the bullpen. So,
correct.
So even that's a positive, I guess.
Yeah, there's no – that's one thing that makes this team very good, and not just in the pitching area, but everywhere, is that they just have depth that they didn't have years ago. And in the pitching especially, they have, you know, probably 10 guys that could fill seven spots right now. And that's something, you know, a few years ago, they were just picking the least worst guy to be that last bullpen guy. And that's a big difference in the mindset of an organization.
Jonathan Broxton expected to close, I'd say, but I know you've talked to him, and he's okay with being the setup guy on this club.
Yeah, he really is more focused on winning and trying to get a World Series ring than he is about being hung up on a role. He knew going in to this that if he signed the deal, there was a chance he may not close, that they may stick with Chapman. And apparently he knew that his eyes were wide open going into the deal. So it's not a hang up for him. He's on board.
One last question I wanted to ask you about was Homer Bailey, who he looked awful the other day, but he took a step forward last year, had a really good September and October. How's he? You can't really trust spring training numbers much. I know he got shelled, obviously, in the one start, but how's he looked?
He's been fine. Like you said, it's hard to tell because but I would say he looks good in the sense that he's in the same fitness area that he was in last year. He bulked up a little bit. He got stronger physically, which I think has always been a thing that he didn't have going into some of his earlier years. He's very strong. He's got the strength now and the stamina to be able to pitch 200 innings. He's done that now after 1 year. He finally gets that mark last year. And he's not living in the past either, though. It's one of those things, like I asked him about one time, and, you know, hey, all the struggles you went through, you kind of finally put it together. Do you ever feel like what the journey was like? He's like, I don't really think about that stuff. I just stay in the present. And I don't think he's thinking about the no-hitter. He's not thinking about how he ended last season. He's really just focused on now. And I think there's no reason why he can't put it together and have the same kind of outings that he had towards the end of this past season. I think he can do it. It's just a question of will he do it, and can he stay healthy? Because last year he was healthy for the first time all season. And that's something you just can't take for granted with Homer Bailey because he's had some injury issues.
Well, it should be a fun season. Hopefully it's an interesting season for you, covering. How long have you been on the Reds beat now? How many years is it?
This is my eighth season. It's my 13th season with MLB.com and my eighth season with the Reds.
That's hard to believe, isn't it?
It went fast, I'll tell you that.
No doubt. Well, let's hope the next eight slows down just a little bit since we're all getting a little bit older. But
yeah, Mark, exactly.
You're doing good work, and enjoy reading your work at Reds.com, and really appreciate you taking a few minutes for me this evening.
Chad, it's my pleasure, and thank you for all the support, for reading, and for linking to my stories. I really appreciate it.